Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland. I'm your hostess for this evening, and I welcome you all to our show. Tonight's topic, ladies and gentlemen, is schools and spirituality. Where is the red line? Many people believe that the absence of prayer and the thought of God or spirituality in our schools is one of the reasons why our public schools have fallen so far from the high standards we've always believed we looked up to. I understand that feeling, because ultimately, government is not God. Government is not the arbiter of ethics, morality, and the difference between good and evil. Government is there to create laws that protect society and allow us to live together without, you know, constantly fighting over the last scrap of bacon or the last piece of bread. Our public schools were created and envisioned by our founding fathers as being the great levelers, a way for every child, no matter what his or her ethnic, religious, or sociological background, to have the opportunity to learn. At the beginning of our country, education beyond learning to read and cipher was the province of the rich. Schools, as such, as we know them now, didn't exist other than private tutors, governesses, colleges and universities into which the rich matriculated after they had completed an education at home. Our founding fathers understood that an educated electorate was absolutely necessary to preserve the representative democracy, the republic that they created for us, and they wanted to make sure that the opportunity to be educated was available to all. But they also understood and believed that there were such things as values and ethics. Public schools were never intended to take the place of the church or the family in teaching these values and ethics. What public schools were intended to do was to give children and young adults a chance to learn things that their parents might not know, and thus create new and better ways of doing things across the political spectrum, the economic spectrum, and the spectrum of ideas and science. Our founding fathers were mostly self-educated men. There were some who were the children of the rich, Thomas Jefferson, George Wythe. They attended prestigious universities, William and Mary, John Adams went to Harvard. But these schools, originally, strangely enough, had their roots as divinity schools. The great universities of Oxford and Cambridge began as education for members of the clergy. That's what education was, because all the way back to the Middle Ages, knowledge and history and ideas were passed down through the written word by monks in monasteries, laboriously handwriting the literature of the past, the stories from the Bible, the Greek and Roman epics and plays. It was monks in religious institutions who preserved what we have of the past. And it was monks and priests who taught other young men, mostly, the information, the knowledge of reading and writing and mathematics and history and all of the other things that we so take for granted now. We would not have the writings of Ovid or Sophocles' plays or the Iliad or the Odyssey without the efforts of the very religious institutions who preserved those writings, as well as the Holy Scripture that they copied laboriously and decorated lavishly. So God and religion, if you will, has been at the root of education for 600 years. Yet our progressive educational pundits are telling us that it must be eliminated from formal education in public schools, because to include anything that pertains to God, spirituality, faith, or religion is somehow or other setting up a national belief system in contravention of the First Amendment, which guarantees religious freedom. Like most progressive explanations of freedom, this is skewed toward the progressive view of man replacing God. In the progressive mindset, education is a tool by which to indoctrinate youth into the belief that human beings are the top of the spiritual food chain, and that by judicious lawmaking from the great minds and hearts of the elite, they can be redesigned into perfect creatures and take the place of the gods or God. In effect, progressives love revisionist history. They absolutely adore the idea of eliminating anything to which people could aspire for counsel and comfort above government and the state. One of the best ways to use education to do this is to eliminate any idea or mention of a power greater than humanity in the public arena. Unless, of course, it was politically correct to do so because you were attempting to cozy up to a theocracy that might potentially be a danger to this nation. It is true that public schools are not the place to indoctrinate children into any political or religious ideology. That is not what they're for. The public schools are there and were designed to be there to allow children to learn about many, many, many different things: science, math, literature, including world religions, history, the foundations of our civilization, and those foundations of other civilizations that have had their effect on history and shaped the world in which we live. That includes understanding the role that religion and spirituality has played in human development and in human history. I am not advocating for a specific religion, ladies and gentlemen. That's not my prerogative. I have no right and no interest in converting anybody to anything whatsoever, political or spiritual. I am an individualist, and I believe in the sanctity of individual freedom to follow whatever path in life your talents, skills, personality, and interests dictate, so long as, to quote Thomas Jefferson, it neither picks my pocket nor breaks my leg. You can believe in whatever you would like to believe. You can believe that you are a Reformed Druid and you worship bushes instead of trees. That's fine with me. It is not what you believe to be the nature of the divine, ladies and gentlemen. It's how you act towards your fellow beings with whom you share this earth and this life. If your religious belief system teaches you the golden rule, and they all do in one way or another, then whichever one you follow is fine by me, because that, I believe, is the one common thread in all religious and spiritual paths. The idea that what goes around comes around, that you are responsible for your choices and your actions, that you can't blame someone else, including God, if you make a bad choice or if you harm someone else for your own pleasure or profit. I do believe that our brief moment, because we are such stuff as dreams are made on, is up to us to shape and form. And it is our effect on the other living beings upon which we will be judged, should that be the end result of ending this sojourn on our earth. So, because I believe as an individual that you have the right to follow whatever spiritual path gives you comfort, enlightenment, ethics, values, and a distinction between good and evil. And I believe that that right to follow your own path includes the right to talk about it. I don't have to agree with you. I don't have to espouse your belief system simply because you are older than I or taller than I or teaching in the front of a classroom or a principal or a superintendent of schools or a neighborhood watch captain or anybody else. I don't make my judgments about people based on which church they go to, nor do I make judgments about people based on what they look like, the color of their skin, their height, their weight, their gender or gender preference. I judge people based on how they treat me and the other human beings with whom they associate. I know many people who believe that Madeline Murray O'Hare, the rabid atheist who basically almost single-handedly removed school prayer from United States public schools, was the devil incarnate. No, I don't think so. I think she, like many people who are obsessed with an idea, believed in a black and white world, that something was always wrong or always right, based on her perceptions of what spirituality was. She wanted to supposedly ensure the rights of atheists to not be bombarded with religion in a public classroom. I can kind of understand that, because as a Catholic going to public schools in a predominantly Protestant community, the version of the Bible verse that was read at the start of the day was a little different in wording from the one that I was taught. But the sense of it was the same. The difference between the recitation of the Lord's Prayer between a Protestant and a Catholic is minuscule. Protestants add on, "For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever and ever, amen." Catholics end it as, "Deliver us from evil. Amen." Does that make the body of the Lord's Prayer, its statements of how to speak to God, any less valuable? Progressives would like to have you believe that the founding fathers denied the importance of religion. They did not. Every single one of them in their writings, letters and formal petitions and essays, mentioned the divine in some fashion. Our laws, our view of individual responsibility, is based on Judeo-Christian teachings, which are the base also of many other religious beliefs, including Islam. The founding fathers were not interested in separating church and state in the sense that progressives use that term. They were interested in separating the individual from the state. That is why the proscription against the establishment of a state religion is there. They had known rulers who demanded that you belong to a specific church in order to own property, in order to vote, in order to have a say in how you were governed. And they believed that this was wrong. They believed that what mattered was that every man should have a say in how he was governed. And I say man deliberately because the founding fathers were not particularly interested in quote-unquote women's rights, because they understood that women were the power behind the throne, and they figured they were dangerous enough in that position. They certainly didn't want to put them on the throne other than as a figurehead. Life was tough enough with your wife as it was. But that was the view of the time. That was the interpretation of Holy Scripture from Paul's "Let your women be silent in the church." And of course, good old Paul was not exactly the most attractive man in the world, and he really didn't like or trust women very much. So you kind of understand why he wanted them all to shut up and let him talk. You get a bunch of women together, and it's awfully difficult for a man to get a word in edgewise. Plus the fact that all men have a selective hearing gene that automatically tunes out the sound of a female voice whenever they want to think about something important. I've seen it happen, ladies and gentlemen, and I know it's there. But this understanding of the importance of religion and religious thought and belief in the underlying foundations of our nation has been lost in a flurry of political correctness. Let's not offend this person because they don't attend my church or follow my rules. My friend, California Living, says that Obama wants school teachers to extend their roles in school to be a life mentor. In other words, we're supposed to be surrogate parents until we die or the children that we teach do. I'm sorry. Not this woman. I do not have children of my own. But had I had them, I certainly would not consider their teachers as replacements for me. It's part and parcel of the whole "your children belong to the state" idea that Hillary Clinton espoused in "It Takes a Village." The idea that the offspring of two people were produced to be proper cogs in the Borg collective and were to be used as the state determined was their best use horrifies and disgusts me. If you allowed the mention of God or the study of comparative theology, even if it were only in passing mention, you would immediately prick that progressive balloon. Because there is nothing in any of the religious belief systems that I have studied, and I've studied a great many of them as a part of my master's degree, that says that your children belong to anybody but you and God. They are not property, ladies and gentlemen. They are living human beings with minds, hearts, bodies, and souls of their own. And your job as a parent is to nurture and protect and teach them. My job as a teacher in the public arena is to give them academic information and skills that they may not be able to get from you, because for whatever reason you may not have studied specific things. My job as a teacher is to open the doors of knowledge to your children beyond what you can give them at home, or reinforce the knowledge that you have already given them. The knowledge of proper conduct, the knowledge of how to treat other people, the knowledge of how to treat other living beings, the morals that say, I can't take from someone else simply because they have it and I want it. The proscriptions against unthinking violence, theft, murder, the idea that everything I want should be mine, and if I don't have it, I can take it from someone who does. My friend California Living says, let Charles Barkley be their mentor. And my friend Bill says, it depends on who you compare him to. He's definitely a step up from Dennis Rodman. Well, for both of you, I tend to agree with both of you. But the whole idea of having anybody be your child's mentor in lieu of yourself really worries me. If you're going to create a totalitarian state, you must keep people ignorant and afraid. And to do this, you must eliminate cohesive families. You must eliminate religious beliefs, because there can be no higher authority than yours, the state's. You must eliminate individuality, because people have to be taught to think alike, act alike, and live alike in order to be controlled. You must inculcate fear, and you can only do that if you promote ignorance and mediocrity. When we decided as a nation that we were going to bend over backwards to avoid offending someone who believed differently from ourselves, we basically threw the Constitution into the trash pile and gave a raspberry to our founding fathers. It was not their intent, ladies and gentlemen, to create a collective. Far from it. Our founding fathers were on the opposite end of the spectrum from collective thinking. Every single one of them was a rampant individualist, and the main reason why the press was not permitted in constitutional convention sessions was because they didn't want headlines about how the delegates were busily threatening to murder each other over specific elements of the document they were trying to create. They had to present a quote-unquote united front to the public in order to give a little bit of stability and hope to a war-torn set of colonies that were trying to become a country. And every single constitutional convention, I'm sure, began with a prayer. Because the founding fathers knew that, brilliant as they were, they were not gods. They could not create the perfect government that would replace heavenly authority and heavenly mercy. They could only do the best they could with the brains they were given by their creator to create a formula and a blueprint for a nation in which each individual could find his or her own path in any area of their lives. That's what the pursuit of happiness meant. It didn't mean you've got to pursue happiness the same way I do. What it meant was that each and every one of us finds happiness in a unique way. And part of the way we find it is in our spiritual pursuits. The reason that I do not believe in one true religion is because I do not believe that we were created as clones. I believe that our Creator did his, her, its, or their job in creating us as the unique individuals we are, and with the understanding that we would find that Creator in unique ways. You can have one true religion, ladies and gentlemen, if you have the Borg Collective. But you cannot have one true religion if you have human beings. Because each and every one of us is a child of God. And if you have children, you know that you do not relate identically to any two of your children, no matter how many of them you have. Because each child that comes from you and your mate is a beautiful, shining individual who will do and be and find those things in life that give him or her satisfaction, success, pleasure, comfort, and joy. And if no two of us are alike, ladies and gentlemen, even down to our fingerprints, our vision of the divine, our photograph, if you will, of our Creator, will be as unique as we are. That doesn't make God 500 million thousand different people. It merely makes our perceptions of God unique. And what we need to do, instead of attempting to eliminate spirituality or force everyone into one specific brand of it, is to accept the fact that it is an innate part of us and that we need the freedom to explore it, to find that path which leads us as individuals to our Creator. Our children are being given rules and ethical values in school because it's the nature of a school to have rules and values. If everybody were doing exactly what they pleased at any given moment, it would be impossible to teach anybody anything or for anyone to learn. Just imagine you're standing on a playground full of five-year-olds just released from school, and then you try to get them together to figure out that A is A and B is B. Not going to work. My friend Rod says, rules, yes, values, question mark. Yes, I kind of understand. Values, though, are innate in rules, Rod. You have rules because you are attempting to create an atmosphere in any given situation in which something can be accomplished. Collectively, hate to use the word, but collectively. In a classroom, rules and values have to join together. The rules are there so that everyone will have an equal opportunity to learn. That cannot happen if everybody's talking at the same time and two people are discussing who's dating who and two other people are playing tic-tac-toe and six more are throwing a ball back and forth and the class's purpose is to teach you how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide fractions. You're not going to be able to accomplish it. So understanding why the rules are there is understanding values, because education is a good. It is a valuable commodity. And if you are going to get one, then there have to be guidelines as to how you conduct yourself in the place where that education is offered to you. So values are a part of rules, whether they're social values, economic values, spiritual values, moral values, they are part of any education, whether it be in the classroom or in the living room. But the ethical values and morality that we teach our children has not just social implications. It also has spiritual implications. I had a student in ISS who was a repeat offender. And as soon as I tell you what he said when I was talking about the fact that laws and rules are there so society will run smoothly, his response was, well, it's legal if I get away with it. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is a quote-unquote value. That's the value he had. Now, where he learned it, I don't know. I don't live with him, thank God. But that quote-unquote value, it's legal if I get away with it, is a moral choice. In other words, his morality, his ethics, said that I can do whatever I want so long as I don't get caught doing it. It's not a very good value, in my estimation, but that's just my personal opinion. Had he had the religious training that I grew up with, he probably would not have developed that as a moral ethic by which to live. Because I was brought up as a Roman Catholic and taught that you don't ever get away with it because God always knows what you're doing. And the ultimate authority is God. You might get away with it for a while in school or on the playground or at home, but sooner or later you're going to have to stand in front of your Creator, and He knows that you did something you weren't supposed to, and you're going to have to answer for it. It's that aspect of spiritual values, the belief in being judged, I guess, that is a moral compass for a great many people. It isn't for everyone, but nothing is the same for everyone, other than our physical anatomy and, you know, how it works. But if we ignore that kind of value, the idea that we are responsible for what we do, then we are saying anything goes, and I can make a law saying it's perfectly fine to videotape or take a photo underneath a woman's skirt, which apparently in Massachusetts it is legal to do now. Friend California Living says, is that not how libs see the world? If I can get away with it, it's legal. Yes, ma'am, it is. Or yes, sir. It is exactly the problem. And it is the kind of morality and ethics and values that they are doing their very best to put into the public education system. That you are not responsible for your choices. That there is no higher authority than the state or the principal. And that if the principal doesn't punish you or the state doesn't punish you, whatever you're doing must be just fine. It may very well be just fine. But it opens a door to the idea that I never have to take responsibility for my actions so long as I can maneuver my way around the law or the rules. Then I am home free. I can do anything I want so long as I'm clever enough not to get caught at it. When you grow up with a religious belief system, whichever one it is, generally you are taught that the ultimate judge is your Creator, or the universe if you follow Buddhism or Zen or Baha'i or many of the other disciplines, but that there is a judgment, that karma exists, that do unto others as you would be done by is a rule to live by. It is a goal to achieve. These are spiritual values. These are the ethical and moral values that religion has throughout human history been responsible for teaching. Our public schools want to eliminate that aspect of education because to most progressives in the public education arena, it is incredibly terrifying to think that anybody should look higher than government for answers, protection, comfort, help, or sustenance. You cannot control people who are not dependent upon you. Religion and spiritual belief have time and time and time again toppled governments and societies. Throughout history, faith and a belief in something higher than man has been a motivating force for drastic change in geopolitical society and rule. To deny that, to eliminate that, to look at it as some kind of weird anomaly that really doesn't matter nowadays, is as foolish as saying, oh, we don't really have to pay attention to the fact that wheels are round because we already know that. And, you know, we're past that. We can make them square now if we want to. Well, no, you can't, because if you make it square, it's not a wheel anymore. But this is progressives. Like my friend Linda said, they are masters at revisionist history. Anything that has happened in the past is fair game to be changed, altered, reinterpreted, or eliminated to make people feel comfortable and dependent upon government as the leading light in their moral, spiritual, economic, political, and physical lives. As I mentioned earlier when the show began, our topic tonight was schools and spirituality with the question, where is the red line? Our president is fond of drawing red lines. He makes about 500 of them as, you know, the individual he's drawing it for steps over them over and over again. But there actually is a red line. I don't want to live in a theocracy, ladies and gentlemen, any more than I want to live in a Borg collective. I do not want my spiritual path dictated for me by anybody. I don't care who they are. I want my spiritual path, my search for union with the divine, to be mine. If I find people who have a similar perception of the nature of the divine and our purpose here, I will follow along the path that I've chosen with them if they're headed on the same one. If I don't find someone who is riding the same donkey up the spiritual mountain as I am, that's okay. If I need the sense of community and other folks on the donkey with me, that's okay too. Because quite often spirituality is bolstered by the feeling of a community of like believers. That's what churches are. That's what they do. But progressives do not want our children to have any belief in or knowledge of the influence of religion and spirituality on human history, other than to basically say anybody who believes in something is dangerous because they'll go kill you if you disagree with them. And unfortunately, they're partly true because there are people who will. But it doesn't mean everybody does, any more than it means everybody who has an adult beverage in the evening is a raging alcoholic and will beat his wife after he has two sips of scotch. Our problem, ladies and gentlemen, in public education is not bad teachers or bad administrators or bad parents or bad children. Our problem is in the denial of the very nature of human beings and their progression from childhood to adulthood, and our inability to see all of the players on the public education stage as having to work together instead of sniping at one another and blaming each other for the fact that no two children learn alike and no two children will progress at the same rate and achieve the same level of success so long as government is in charge. I have watched for years the infighting that goes on among parents, teachers, administrators, federal educational bureaucrats, children. Everybody is out for, I want mine. And nobody is paying attention to the fact that every single one of those entities has an effect on the education of our children. And unless they get their act together and start paying attention to the fact that every one of them is responsible and no one of them is to blame for everything, we are going to continue to have chaotic, useless public schools that do nothing more than push children into slots to fit into the great progressive machine. My friend California Living says that even Catholic and Christian schools are now being told what to teach. Of course they are. The whole point of Common Core, ladies and gentlemen, is not standards at all. It has very little to do with standards. What it has to do with is uniformity. The two words are not interchangeable. We require uniformity in the standards of our weights and measures for obvious reasons. We cannot have standards of education that embrace uniformity because children are not eggs or flour or wheat or butter that can be weighed and measured and put into a box and sold over the counter to somebody to make the progressive cake with. I know so many great teachers, ladies and gentlemen. One friend of mine is strongly considering leaving the profession. And she's a really good teacher. But she's had it up to the eyebrows with being blamed every time a kid doesn't study or doesn't try or has a problem at home. Everything's always her fault because she doesn't like the kid, or she's not fair to the kid, or because the work is too hard for the kid. Or somebody else got an A and the kid didn't, and his paper was just as good and he only got a B. Why? More and more really good teachers, ladies and gentlemen, are fleeing the profession because they are tired of being the whipping boy for a system that is failing not because of them, but because of the adversarial nature of the interaction of the people involved in it. Administrators are terrified of being sued. So they bend over backwards to not offend a parent. But some parents are offended if their child doesn't do well in school. It's not the fault of the teacher 90% of the time. 90% of the time, it's the fault of the student. Because, for whatever reason, the child is not absorbing the material. You cannot teach someone who is unwilling to learn. I went through that last week with a student I had in my ISS room who doesn't like math, and because it's difficult. It doesn't come easily. So he refuses to learn it. He turns his back on it and says it's stupid and useless and he doesn't need to know it, so he's not going to do it anymore. And of course, I'm sure that certain types of parents, if they had that child, would blame the school and the teacher for that. You're supposed to make him like math. All right, you tell me, madam, if you don't like peas, how am I going to make you like them by serving you more peas? The function of a teacher is not necessarily to make a student like whatever it is he or she is teaching. That would only happen if all we did was teach how to play Wii games, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry. I had a kid in ISS today who finished all of his assignments from his teachers, so I gave him additional review assignments, some extra grammar work, and then I gave him some fraction review. And his expression, needless to say, was, fractions? Ooh! Kind of like he just noticed a bad smell and wanted to run. My friend California Living says, tell the student if you can get the answer correct, I shall reward you with that amount of something or other, and they'll learn to like math. And yeah, that works. As a matter of fact, that's the way when I was a tutor, I taught kids to the comparison between multiplication and division and how to do long division. I used pennies or M&Ms. And if they did it right, they got to keep the pennies and eat the M&Ms. And it worked. But you see, we can't do that because that's bribery. How does, my friend Borb says, how does this relate to the Department of Education or the new era of tyranny? It relates in the same way it always has, Borb. It relates in the sense that we are looking to a government institution, public education, to train our children in ethics and values and morality, instead of looking to that government institution, public education, to teach them the basic academic skills they will need to continue to learn as long as they live. Because public education is not about teaching academics anymore. It's about reforming our children into the complacent, obedient citizens who will happily smile and hold out their hand to receive tyranny so long as it fills their belly or puts a roof over their head. Because they are being taught that the only values and ethics that matter are the security of the group and figuring out a way to make it legal by getting away with it. And yes, as Vorp says, shouldn't education be determined by the local school board? Certainly it should. But you forget about the almighty federal and state dollar. If you want your teachers paid and your schools heated and your textbooks available, okay, then you've got to have money to pay for these things. And if you live in a rural county like mine that has a large land area and a fairly small population, there's only so much tax money that you can count on. So you look to other sources. Because no matter how much people say they believe education is important, when it comes to shelling out from their own pockets, they have a tendency to back off. And it's understandable. We all pay taxes. Half the time we pay taxes and don't even notice that we're doing it on our phone bill, our electric bill, our internet usage, what we buy over the internet, whatever. Okay. But when it comes to a new tax increase in order to fund public education, people who don't have children say, why should I bother? And people who do have children say, you should, because these children are important to all of us. And, of course, the federal government and the state, well, these children belong to the state, and we've got to educate them to take their place in making the state run smoothly and give you all the things you want. We have been bought, ladies and gentlemen. My friend Linda says that she heard de Blasio, New York's new mayor, denied charter schools for the poor, which he did, denied the funding for it, because that's elitist, I'm sure. It's better to keep people ignorant, so long as everybody's ignorant. We can't have anybody having more opportunity than anybody else. We can't provide more opportunity to those who wish to take advantage of it. We have to have limited opportunity so we all wind up the same. Education, Borp, used to be the parents' responsibility. In the days of our founding fathers, it was. But our founding fathers understood that if you were not wealthy, you could not afford to hire a tutor or governess for your children. You had to teach them yourself. And your abilities, your academic knowledge, might be less than they are capable of understanding and going forward with. They might have talents and skills academically that you can't satisfy because you yourself don't possess them. So finding a way to let your child learn more than you can teach him so that he can exceed your status in society has been one of the reasons people have come to this nation for hundreds of years. A lot of parents, as my friend California Living says, don't want the responsibility for educating your own kids for lots of different reasons. Economic, two families, two parents working means more economic freedom, more things, more comforts, more access to the goods and services of the world. The parents themselves may feel undereducated and incapable of imparting their knowledge to their children and unable to take them beyond a certain level. Sometimes parents are intimidated by school teachers and school administrators who show by the way they're treating the parent that the parent is stupid and incapable of teaching their child anything, and they'd better keep them in school because that's the only place they're going to learn anything because you're too dumb to teach them. We are drifting away, and have been for the last 40 years or so, from the idea that we are all required to be lifelong learners. And to pull it back to the topic of the evening, part of the reason we've drifted away is because we have denied the idea that there is anything beyond man. And as Vorp says, broken families contribute to this problem. And it does, because religion and spiritual beliefs promoted strong family units and parental responsibility, and parents teaching their children the spiritual discipline that the family followed. It gave common ground, common moral and ethical values that were followed by supposedly everyone in the family and taken outside the home and followed in the wider world. But because our federal government has said that the state is your ultimate source of charity when you cannot afford the things your children need, instead of the church, is it any wonder that the state is becoming the voice of God or the presence of God? Marriage and procreation have been throughout human history determined, ruled, and codified by the religious belief systems of the society in which they occur. That also promoted the form of inheritance of property. In Judaism, for example, being Jewish comes from the mother, because it's very difficult for someone to claim to be the mother of a child in a community where you're obviously with child and have members of the community helping you deliver it. There is no visible sign of fatherhood, ladies and gentlemen, but there is of motherhood. And property, belongings, are important in any society. That's why societies make laws about property. Because the things that we own have to be protected from usurpation and theft by people who do not own them. And one way to do that is through inheritance. My friend California Living says that she's seen a person come to a church with which he's not associated and ask for money for gas to get him home, and the church refused it. And this is part and parcel of it. One of the tenets of Christianity, ladies and gentlemen, that differs in its interpretation and its usage from Islam is the idea that you should love thy neighbor as thyself. Islam has the same tenet, but your neighbor is only a fellow Muslim. Christianity says that every man is my neighbor. And in basic Christianity, charity to thy neighbor is one of the three great acts one does to show love of God. To show love, which is caritas, spiritual love, from which we derive the term charity. To have hope and to have faith. Those three things, love, faith, and hope, are part of the of many religions, not just Christianity. They are virtues. They are goods, if you will. Faith, hope, and charity. That's exactly it, Linda. Those three things are the essence of just about every religious belief system mankind has ever followed. Faith, that there is something greater than oneself to whom one can turn for aid and comfort. Hope, that tomorrow will be better than today. And love, charity, that says giving is the right thing to do. Unfortunately, Americans have learned to distrust charitable institutions, including churches. Scandals involving televangelists who have gathered millions of dollars from their faithful followers and used it to further their own comfort or purchase limousines and mansions. The scandals over molestations of young people by Catholic priests. The madrasas of Islam that teach young boys that their ultimate goal is to blow everybody up and die for the glory of Allah. Even public charities like the Red Cross or the United Way, where the people who run the place make millions, and every dollar you give, of every dollar you give, 10% actually goes to the needy. There are very few charitable organizations or churches that have an unblemished record when it comes to moral purity and true giving of oneself. But that is not the same as spirituality, ladies and gentlemen. A church is an organization and a creation of human beings. And human beings, again, are not God. Human beings gathered together, when they share spiritual paths. But because they are human beings, there's always somebody who wants to have more power of directing that path than others. Churches ask for donations or membership fees in order that those funds may be used for charitable purposes. But where the power lies in an individual church determines what a charitable purpose is. Is it a charitable purpose to build a brand new recreation hall attached to the church property that costs $1 million so we can all get together and have potluck suppers on Saturday? Or is it a charitable purpose to donate that $1 million to a homeless shelter so that the people who must stay there until they can find work or a way to earn a living can have running water and clean sheets and a place to wash their clothes? Again, man's perception of charity is just that, man's perception. And our current administration and the progressive left want man's perspective to be the ultimate. And not just all man's perspective, but theirs. They have all fallen victim to the Icarus disease. and they will eventually suffer the same fate that Icarus did. The wax that holds on their wings will melt as they approach too close to the sun, and they will fall. Unfortunately, when they fall, when they crash and burn, they'll take a lot of other people with them. No civilization in the history of mankind has endured forever. It's the nature of mankind not to be able to endure forever. We are temporal beings. But we also have to understand that if we deny the existence of or the possibility of something greater than ourselves, of which we are an integral part, we are thrown back on our own basic flawed human nature. When we say that our children do not need to have any understanding of spirituality and spiritual thinking in order to be educated, then we are telling them that that aspect of themselves is meaningless and valueless. I, for one, don't believe that it is. I believe that that aspect of ourselves is what gets us a little below the angels and keeps us from falling below the beasts. I think our biggest problem, ladies and gentlemen, on the great question of should God or spirituality have a place in public education, is that every single one of us wants to determine which God should take that place. Should I demand that every child in my ISS classroom see my Creator the way I do, simply because I'm older than they are and better educated than they are and more life experience than they are? No, I don't think so. They may have a clearer image of their Creator than I. I don't know, and I never will, because I cannot enter into their soul and see the divine the way they do. But neither can I deny them the right to express what they see. I think what we need to do, ladies and gentlemen, is to start, instead of separating church and state, I think we need to separate church and God. Because, unfortunately, just watching the discussion in the chat room tonight about the way some churches behave toward their adherents and their members, what matters isn't the church. What matters is the understanding that there is more to ourselves than just body and mind and emotion. And I disagree with Vorp. I think all religions are equal, because all religions are the product of man. The product of one or more human beings who have had a peak experience of some sort and have, for whatever reason, determined to share that peak experience as the ultimate way to unite with the divine. I disagree that Islam is not the equal of Christianity or Judaism. It is the equal of Christianity or Judaism. because it is a thing of man. It is man's interpretation, a man, Muhammad's interpretation of his peak experience with God. Its actions, I believe, are not good. Its teachings, as they are interpreted among the jihadists, are evil. But I have also seen people use Christianity as justification for evil and cruel acts. It isn't the religion per se. It is the people who espouse it and interpret it and use it as a reason to do those things they believe will give them power. It always comes back to anybody who says, I am a human being and I know what God wants for everyone else, so you must listen to me. And it doesn't matter which religion it is. Every single one of them has been used as justification for treating others with something less than charity. My friend Vorp, Christians may not gather together in the public square to stone someone or hang a heretic in our current country, but they managed to kill a great many women in Salem for being witches. And Christians, good Christians in Africa, have busily murdered their fellow Africans in the name of God. And a great many good Christians out there, under the guidance of a couple who claim to teach you how to raise a Christian family, have put their children out in the backyard in the middle of a snowstorm for 5 or 6 hours for breaking house rules. I do not ascribe to any specific religion, simply because every single one of them has been used too often to condone evil in the name of God told me to do this. And that is why I do see a red line, ladies and gentlemen, in spirituality and religion in school. And California Living, I tend to agree with you in that respect. I would not choose abortion were I pregnant, unmarried, and incapable of caring for a child. I do not believe that abortion should be a method of birth control. And no, Vorp, let's not get ridiculous here. I have not said that because Christians burned witches 200 years ago, they belong on the terror watch list. Please don't put words in my mouth that I haven't said. What I said was that every single religion, including Christianity, historically has been used to justify heinous acts. And I do not give Islam a free pass, because it too is being used to commit heinous acts. It isn't the religion. It is the human beings who interpret it and use it as an excuse to do evil. Take a good look at the Spanish Inquisition. And no, it didn't happen yesterday. But the shoe was on the other foot then, because the Inquisition did to Muslims what Muslims are doing to us. I believe that the spiritual nature of human beings has to be recognized because it is a part of us. And I believe that it has to be recognized in all aspects of life. But I do not believe that any two religions can really be compared to one another on the basis of which one is nicer than the other, and that makes them better, because every single one of them has been darned unnice in its time. And I am not denigrating any of them, because I believe you have a choice. You, personally, every single one of you out there listening, and everybody in the chat room, to follow whatever spiritual path you believe to be right and just, and that gives you the opportunity to exercise those three great values of faith, hope, and charity. It isn't your religion that matters to me. It's your actions. And I believe that that approach to understanding the role of spirituality is what should be in our school. Not a specific religion, not a specific church, not a specific view of God or gods or goddess, but the understanding that we are not the end-all be-all of right and wrong. Have a caller on the line, folks. Let's see who's there. Hello there.
Hi, it's the California Bird of Paradise who's fighting against craziness.
I thought I recognized your number. Glad you called in. How are you doing this evening, Linda?
Doing well. It's been an incredible show because it's a lot of food for thought on the table. When you talk about the founders, just I'm going to go to that for a minute. They were men who actually believed that there was something higher and better than they, as the beings below the angels and above the beasts. So
yes.
they felt that there was someone else to answer to, a higher...
Yes, a higher power.
You will. Okay, right. And which is not a bad thing. And
nope.
What they were, I think what their ideas were was like if they were going to say a moment of silence or something, that they were trying to create a theocracy, which is what they had run away from, you know.
Yeah, and
were opposed to.
I agree with that completely. We do it in my school every morning. After the Pledge of Allegiance, there's a moment of silence.
Awesome.
Yeah, and that's
and like I've said before, if the atheists or the progressives want to complain, just tell them that when it's final exam time, there will be prayer in those schools.
Yeah.
And there's nothing they can do to stop that.
Not a darn
God,
thing.
Please let me pass this exam.
and, you know, the funny part of it is, with all of the controversy and all the screaming and howling and all this, that, and the other stuff, there's no way that you can make God illegal.
you
can't. And you can't
it's
make
crazy.
Prayer illegal, because prayer doesn't mean you have to stand in your front yard and scream. You can be sitting in your living room with your mouth shut and pray just as hard.
Right.
So it's the absurdity of the assumption that somehow or other human beings are the final arbiters of all ethics, morality, and value, and there is nothing beyond us. We are, as the Nietzsche and the rest of the idiots that predated and were the roots of Nazism, the Götterdämmerung, the twilight of the gods, man and Superman, George Bernard Shaw, the same progressive Fabian socialist idea that man is perfectible and we can take the place of God, because if we just let all these wonderful progressives lead us in the right path, it is its own church, Linda. It is its own church. And it works exactly the same way.
When you're dealing with that whole, the state, the Fed, the tax money and the rest, it has morphed into something that it never should have been. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people and, you know, there's a lot of areas that need to be catered to. There's the rural areas, there's the inner cities, there's all this situation. If it was up to me, I'd go back to the two-room schoolhouse and just, I mean, I was watching Glenn today, and he had the people from the 912 projects all over the country, and it was like this movement sparked, and it was like these people just took it upon themselves to be little community organizers, if you will. And I hate to use that because it reminds me of someone, but you know.
I know.
but they just did this. They took this initiative, whether they were 80 years old or they were, you know, 20, and they just ran with it. And I think that there might be a calling for those same people and people like them to look at this Common Core and this unholy alliance with all this money flooding from the Fed, et cetera, to do something on their own and privatize it to the best of their ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you talk about faith, hope, and charity, that, you know, who better than an entrepreneur or an individual to start their own, you know, slush fund, if you will. I mean, it can be done. I think it's just a will to do it. And the more they keep pushing, you know.
And the more people who turn their backs on government handouts and say, no, I'm going to do this myself. It always comes back to, and it works with government just like it works with churches and religions. And I'm not talking about spiritual perceptions here, Linda. I'm talking about the structure, the actual economic and legal, if you will, hierarchy within any given religious discipline. It's not about furthering the interests of God. It's about furthering the interests of whoever happens to be in charge at the moment. No matter what they say from the pulpit, it comes right back down to power. And you have a great deal of power over people if you claim to be speaking for God. And that's what our government is now doing. They're taking the same podium, pulpit, if you will, and they're doing the same thing that the Catholic Church did at the time of Luther, when Luther split off, married a nun, and basically started the whole Reformation all by himself. The idea that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely works for no matter what human institution you're talking about.
Sure.
And
well,
I have said over and over again, ever since I was 20, for God's sake, that God isn't church. You know, a belief in a higher power, whatever you call it, whatever religious practice you follow, is independent of whatever church you collect with in with other people.
Fellowship
who believe,
with, right.
Yeah, similarly to you. And I've said before, and it's a good analogy, if you walked into any religious meeting place in this country of any of the religions, and you told every single person in there, here's a piece of paper, draw me a picture of God, no two of them would look alike.
Right. Especially the kids. That would be real fun.
Yeah.
I'd love
One of the reasons David was a lifelong agnostic is because the God that he got introduced to in Lutheran school was a mean old man in a nightshirt who spent all of his time watching to make sure he could catch you doing something bad so he could punish you.
Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because what the left is doing in our country is what the far extremes did under the USSR, which would be the Lenins and the Stalins and the Pol Pots and the rest of them. They those were the statists, if you will, and they knew that they had to be the God of the people, that they had to eliminate whatever that deity was that these people were trying to, you know, love thy neighbor folks, they had to eliminate that because that gave people real hope and that gave people something higher than the state. And they couldn't have that competition. That was competition for them. They can't have
Exactly. Exactly. It made people independent of them. That was the whole reason that Christianity and the Christian martyrs changed and basically brought down the Roman Empire. That and the fact that it was overburdened with slaves. Because the Christians who were killed in Nero's arena in the Colosseum didn't care that they were dying because they believed truly that they were going somewhere better. And you don't have a lot of control over somebody if the ultimate punishment doesn't faze them at all.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And people like Bonhoeffer, the same kind of thing. When your faith in something greater than man is so deep and so strong that you will accept death rather than give it up or deny it, how can they control you? They can't.
You can't, and that's why people love Patrick Henry's speech, because he felt the same way. He'd been pushed to his max with that little deal. But And I understand it, because I think at that point they were pretty much terrified. They could see around them that the arms were being built. There was no boogeyman for any, you know, other than they to be fearful of. Yeah. So.
And it inevitably happens. We may see the Christian Second Coming, or we may see the Baha'i, Enlightenment, or the Dalai Lama won't have to come back again because everybody will have become enlightened, or, you know. But it does happen. It happens over and over again. Mm-hmm. When we have screwed up the planet badly enough, something greater than ourselves steps in. Now, I would prefer that we not screw up the planet, because I happen to be living on it. But
at the time,
but I'm not whoever it is who's in charge of the universe. And as I've said a million times, I'm not even going to put in my resume if there's ever a vacancy. It's way more responsibility than I want. I have enough trouble with a classroom. I do not need to manage the entire earth. And the cats, given the fact that I had to chase Tip off the desk before I could do the show tonight. But he's the one that the photograph I posted on Facebook. That's Tiptoe, my big black cat. And he's big enough that when he wants attention, he makes his presence known. Weighs about 18 pounds. he's a big boy. But it comes down to, you know, Linda, that I do not believe in the efficacy of a theocracy. And I don't want this nation to become one. But neither do I want it to publicly and governmentally deny the possibility that there is something greater than human beings, because that reduces us to nothing more than dependence upon those who have seized power and are using it to control us. I do not want to be a martyr.
That's why that First Amendment was in the position that it is in. Those five freedoms are paramount. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the second one makes sure that all the other ones get followed as well.
Exactly. All of these idiots who are busily saying that, you know, well, that only means so we can have a militia. Bull. It was the militia that was busily fighting against the British Army, and that's why the British Army didn't want them to have any guns or ammunition. Because it was militias that... Well, Great Britain didn't station troops here until it looked like we wanted no part of them anymore. They weren't here to protect us any more than the King of Siam was having an ally who was strong enough to protect him, who would protect him out of all he owns. That was the situation we were in during the Revolutionary War. And, you know, I hate to quote, the King and I, but it fits.
It's true.
And, you know, it's one of the reasons that I spend so much time trying to convince my students that history matters. Because those who do not learn from it are truly doomed to repeat it. History is about people, and people's history is intricately connected with people's spirituality. Mm-hmm. The two things walk hand in hand.
And one of my favorite from back about two and a half years ago, our friend Frank Winkle, he used to do his show. And he used to say things like, he says, I got to hand it to Glenn Beck. He made reading history sexy again. It was so true. Yeah. So anyway, on that note, on the anniversary of the 9/12 project, I'm going to let you wrap it up, and thanks so much for taking the call. It was great.
It's always a pleasure to hear from you, my dear, and happy anniversary to all of us 9/12 project alumni.
Absolutely. Okay. God bless. See you in the chat room.
Bless you, sweetie. Bye. You enjoy that beautiful California weather.
Thanks. Bye.
It looks like we've got another potential for sleet and freezing rain tonight and tomorrow morning. Oh, happy days are here again. So I'll be thinking of you out there in the balmy California sun. Everybody who's out there tonight listening in or in the chat room, I have chosen the topic that I have tonight and every night because I believe that if we don't talk about things, we're never going to find our common ground. We don't always agree with one another, ladies and gentlemen, even a group like ours, PatriotFamilies.com, that is made up of a great many conservatives and libertarians and folks who are participating Christians and people who believe in individual rights and a market economy. And we have grouped together because we have certain goals in common. Every one of us believes in the right of the individual to be free to make his or her own choices in the arena of life and to take responsibility for those choices, learn from our mistakes, and hopefully from our good choices make the world a little better place. And many of us are guided by our spiritual beliefs and our religion and our church. Many of us are guided by our inner perceptions, our peak experiences, our intellect, our life experience. But we have all one thing in common. We believe in the founding principles of this nation. We believe in individual liberty across the board. And most of us, when it comes right down to it, would truly follow the dictum, "I may disagree with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it." And it is a joy, ladies and gentlemen, a real joy to me to see the discussions that come up in the chat room and the callers who call in who may differ and or who may seem to be polar opposites of the way I might approach life. But we always seem to be able to find that common ground. We always seem to be able to talk with one another about those things that are important to us, those things that we value and that we love. And among those things are family, our version of the divine, and our country. And I believe that that's what has made this nation among the greatest in the history of mankind. And that is what will save this nation from going down to ignominy and failure. Because we have created a climate, ladies and gentlemen, that has produced us to speak without fear what we believe. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight out there in the listening audience and here in the chat room. Every single one of you I consider to be a friend. Because of your support and your willingness to express your beliefs and stand up for them, whether anyone agrees with you or not. That's the essence of what it means to be an American, ladies and gentlemen. And I want my country to continue to be the fertile ground for people like you to grow on, learn on, and live on. I invite you to join us at www.patriotfamilies.com, where you'll meet the folks that call in and the people in the chat room and the folks who listen to this radio show. And you'll have access to other shows that Patriot Family sponsors, where ideas and the expression of them matter. Because, as the intro music to my show says, we are the nation. Every one of us, every one of us contributes to this nation. As I tell my students every day, history is about people, and we are making history every moment that we live. Because none of us can see the future with clarity. We can only hope and have faith that it will be better than it is today, and treat one another with caritas, with charity and love. Have a wonderful evening, everybody, and please join me next Thursday here on Blog Talk Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Don't forget to set your clocks for this Saturday night for Patriot Education. I look forward to seeing you and hearing you all. And as always, my friends, I send my dearest and greatest love to my greatest fan. It will be 1 year on March 19th. Since I lost my David. And I know that he's probably listening to this show because, God bless him, he always did. And I want you all to know that your memories of him mean as much to me as mine. Bless you all. Have a wonderful evening. Good night.